Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
And we are... No, yeah, almost. It's going round. Okay, we are live with Stu Peters, folks. Stu, call out the demonic PDF file elites who are, you know, at the top of the pyramid of the Epstein network. He said, you get one party in, one party out. Same old demonic, monstrous nonsense, folks. They're all compromised. Top of titans of industry, top of royalty, ex-Prince Andrew, etc. Top of politics, bankers, you know, just... all kinds of famous people from all over the world. Bill Gates, Richard Branson, Black, etc., Wexner, and round and round it goes. We've had two people called into the cop shop here in the UK. No prosecutions. America's even less. But, you know, Stu, we salute you for speaking out about these monsters. Before we get into it, all of Stu's links are in the description box. Please support his important work. What put Epstein on the radar for you, my friend? A huge thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. Well, like you said, when you start looking into the control structure of my government, I can't speak to yours necessarily, but, you know, of course, as an American and as an America First, a genuine, authentic America First person, you know, I'm concerned about the way that my country is running. And so what do you do? Well, you do something similar to what you would do, let's say that you're a business owner. So here at the Stu Peters Network, if something's going wrong in the way of editing, I go to my editing guys. You know, if something's going in the way of production going awry or, you know, booking, I go to that person and I look to see, hey, what's the problem? And if I find that the problem is consistent across the board with all of these things, you know, you mentioned the fallacy of two parties, the idea that there is a red or a blue or a Republican, a Democrat, the donkey, the elephant, the right, the left. That is a very well methodically thought out, geniusly implemented weapon that has been deployed against the American people. And so I just kind of started going back as to, you know, like, when did all of this change? When did our government really seem to kind of go off the rails? And I mean, people could argue, hey, 1913, the installation of the Federal Reserve, which obviously put a serious grip on the economic system. And banking and finance in our country. And so at that point, you know, the tyranny really started. I think you could talk about the assassination of John F. Kennedy. He was asking for Israel, you know, to not have a nuclear program. They weren't allowed to have an undeclared nuclear program. They weren't allowed to bring money into our government that AIPAC and other, you know, pressure groups for Israel had to register with FARA as foreign agents, which, I mean, that seems like something that shouldn't be that controversial because they are a foreign country and they have their own interests that are separate from the interests of the American people. And then you have on May 14th, 1948, the Rothschild purchased arbitrarily scribbled on a map, illegitimate, in my opinion, nation state of Israel that was formed. And all of a sudden, that's when everything was really kicked into high gear. And so when you start to look at, you know, the actions of these politicians, you say, hey, I mean, obviously, these people aren't listening to their constituents. They're not answering emails. They're not holding town halls. They're going on these massive delegations funded by foreign interests that are not required to register with FARA to Israel to kiss the wall and lick the wall and hump the wall and cry at the wall and touch the wall. And, you know, their forked tongues are coming out at the wall. And so it doesn't take a lot. And I think what happened for me was it was the USS Liberty interview. And I'm going around the block here to go across the street because I know that your question is about Epstein. But I sat down with Phil Turney.
We love history on this channel. So it's great what we're hearing. Thank you.
All right, good. So I sat down with Phil Turney, who is for your audience, he is one of the survivors of the USS Liberty attack. And that attack was, of course, carried out by Israel. Now, the official narrative is that that was a mistake of identity and that, you know, it was an accident and that people have atoned for their accident. They've apologized and everybody has moved on. But when you look at the incident and when you sit down with the survivors, Phil Turney and several others who I interviewed in Washington, D.C., you learn that, well, hold on a second. First of all, this boat was torpedoed. And then it was Israeli warplanes that came back around and they strafed the deck with machine gun fire. And then they came back around again. This is an American flag ship, by the way. They came back around a second time from the air, Israeli jet fighter warplanes. And then they, you know, cut to pieces people that were on the deck with large caliber machine gun fire. And then as the USS Liberty was sinking and as sailors were trying to, you know, flee for their lives via their lifeboats, then these warplanes came back around and they cut to pieces the lifeboats, which is an international war crime. Obviously, you can't do that. And that can't be a mistaken identity. And so, you know, these people had they've been cast aside and they've kind of been highlighted as, you know, like old senile, you know, alcoholics and drug addicts or whatever, conspiracy theorists. I mean, they were there in first person. How can they be theorizing about a conspiracy? And so when I published those interviews on Rumble, I was like viciously attacked by the New York Times, by the Rolling Stone, by the USA Today, and I was called anti-Semitic. And I'm thinking to myself, well, why would that be? And so as part of talking to people in government and as part of looking at why there was this visceral, vitriolic response about these interviews that were published, and they were conducted with people who were there in first person. 34 people died that day. I think it's a really big deal. These people have never had their day in court. They've never had a hearing, you know, before Congress, which whatever. I mean, I don't know when the last time some GOP inquiry or investigation that's been held on Capitol Hill, you know, with Trey Gowdy, who's now on Fox News. And that's another interesting thing, by the way, the Fox News pipeline to and from presidential administrations in Washington, D.C. If you notice, you have like Jeanine Pirro is now in the Trump administration, Pete Hegseth, Dan Bongino. And then it goes reverse. Also, by the way, you have, you know, former war criminal propagandist Dana Perino, who was with George Bush, went from the White House to Fox News. I mean, this is just like a revolving door. In my opinion, it's like a CIA training ground, a breeding ground for operatives, because the media in our country, it's no secret, is just the entertainment arm of the military-industrial complex. By extension, American politics is really the WWE for the military-industrial complex, which, in my opinion, is housed. Its front lines are in Israel on Rothschild Boulevard, where all of the private equity overlords and central bankers take up residence. So the Epstein stuff, it didn't take me really all that long to figure out, oh, well, aside from the shekels, aside from, you know, the bribes and the money that gets dumped into the campaign coffers of these people, and aside from, you know, the promise of lavish lifestyles and private jets and, you know, delegations funded by, you know, people other than you, where you have, you know, Secret Service bodyguards and you are basically immune to the law. You can behave lawlessly. I think that it didn't take too long to realize, okay, well, it's certainly not just the Democrats. It's certainly not just the Clintons that are entangled in this scandal involving trafficking, but that it's everybody. And then when you really start to take, because keep in mind, I was a very ardent, a fervent supporter of Donald Trump. In 2015, when Trump came down that escalator, just as the Simpsons had predicted long before that moment happened, when I saw that, and I wasn't a big Simpsons fan, so I didn't catch it right away. But when I saw that, I am now a Simpsons fan. I just thought, you know, this is a real breath of fresh air in the American political system. And there was, you know, some Hollywood director that referred to Donald Trump as being the human hand grenade that would be tossed into the American political system and blow it up like the toilet that it is from the inside out. And the promises, the jargon, the lingo, the vernacular, the phrasing, the name calling, you know, the blunt truth without sounding like a polished politician. That's what we wanted. Like, everybody wanted that. We were tired of the status quo politics, because it's just, I know the list of words that you sent over that I'm not allowed to say here. It's disastrous for our country, and it is a big self-inflicting wound, you know, for the American people that is unsustainable for us to continue down this path. So we need something new, and Trump represented that, and it was Trump's message, you know. And looking back at it now, obviously hindsight is 2020. Looking back at it, I now see it for what it was, and fast forward to what we've learned. You know, a lot of people in hyperspeed since October 7th, because it's no secret that everybody has watched in real time on live streams, 4K, on every video hosting platform, known to man, what has happened in Gaza and in the West Bank, what's happening right now in South Lebanon, where the Israelis, as they love to call themselves, have said that they will use the Gaza method in Lebanon. And then you look at the history of every place that the military, the American military, has been deployed, knowing that Benjamin Netanyahu lied to Congress about Saddam Hussein possessing weapons of mass destruction, which we've known for a very long time. I think that's pretty common knowledge, even amongst people who are, like, you know, not involved with conspiracy theories, or, you know, who are still relatively plugged into the matrix. That's kind of common knowledge. It's been proven that those weapons of mass destruction and the ties to Al-Qaeda and the incubator babies, they were all lies used as the pretext to gain public support from Americans to go to war in the Middle East. And then country after country after country after Saddam Hussein, you know, you look at what we did in Syria, you look at Benghazi, Libya, you look at, I mean, all of these other countries, and then you look at the stated goal or objective of the people like Benjamin Netanyahu, who's the prime minister of Israel, who has said that greater Israel is his objective. And he has brought the map of greater Israel to the White House on his 6 million visits since Trump retook office in January of last year. They wear the map of greater Israel on their arm sleeves of their IDF uniforms, the same uniform that Brian Mast, a sitting congressman in the United States government, wears to the People's House in Washington, D.C. for work. And so it just became very obvious that the Epstein compromise control capture operation is what, other than money and other than the threat of, you know, something really bad happening to you or your family, because there's certainly that's happening. Cynthia McKinney is a great example. Marjorie Taylor Greene is a great example. She's no longer in Congress. She was pushed out of Congress for standing with the victims of Jeffrey Epstein because she refused to remove her name from the discharge petition, which I think is something that everybody should salute. I think that's a hill that we could all die on. I think that, you know, protecting children, keeping children safe, keeping people, predators and people who wish to harm children, away from children is a really great idea. And then searching for accountability for people who have hurt children in the worst ways fathomable. In a lot of cases, I think probably in ways that most people don't even want to imagine could possibly be true. Marjorie Taylor Greene did that. Thomas Massie is doing that. And I think aside from the two of them, you know, there's a candidate in Florida 6, Dan Bilzerian, who absolutely, but I mean, other than that, currently in government, there just really isn't anybody. And when Marjorie Taylor Greene was forced out, she was told that if something bad, she was told by Donald Trump, she was told by President Donald Trump that if something bad were to happen to her kids, that they would deserve it, that it would be her fault because she stood with these people. So this stuff, it's pretty easy to find if you will allow yourself to actually look. And what I mean by that is there's so many people who have put all of their eggs in the Trump basket because, you know, as I mentioned, things were so bad for our country. Things were bad economically, merit-based economy. You know, we were a country that was constantly at war. I don't know if your viewers know this or not, or if you do, but because, I mean, I know what your proximity, but the American military for 37 years straight, there has not been a year that has gone by in 37 years that the United States military, young American men have not been deployed to the Middle East to be involved in some sort of kinetic conflict, whether it be, you know, a regime change operation or, you know, nation building or the spreading of democracy. We love to use that one. For 37 years, this country has been involved in war. And that's the essence of the forever war. You have to keep the flames of the forever war stoked in order to keep the money flowing through you know, the Lockheed Martins and the Raytheons through the military-industrial complex, who houses its front lines in Israel, and then back into the D.C. beltway and into the pockets and the campaign coffers of the war profiteers that are inside of our government, people like Lindsey Graham, people like Ted Cruz. These people are on the Fox News channel talking every day that they're saying things that if I were to say them, I would probably be thrown in jail or prison. You know, I mean, these people are calling for the absolute annihilation of entire civilizations. Donald Trump, the president, said that he was going to end the Iranian civilization and that it would be beyond repair, that you wouldn't be able to sustain life in Iran. And this is the president of the United States. So, I mean, it just became very obvious that these people are controlled by something that they're compromat other than just the shekels, other than, you know, just the monetary influence. And that is that these people are praying after children, that they have fetishes, that they have desires, that they crave this kind of, you know, ritualistic experience. I know I'm trying to stay away from these words, man, for YouTube, but that they prey on these dark desires, and that they put these people into situations and they get them on tape doing these things. And from there, it's just, and if you've read the Epstein files, the pages that have been released, we obviously haven't been able to get through all of them. I mean, there's so many of them. But what I did do is I used multiple different AI platforms to isolate words, and Trump being one of them was mentioned over 37,000 times in the Epstein files. And I think the second next was like 500 times. So if that says anything, Donald Trump was, and I believe remains, I don't believe that Jeffrey Epstein is in the condition that our government says that he's in. I believe that he's in Israel, and I think he's doing just fine. But Donald Trump is best friends with Jeffrey Epstein. Donald Trump, another Epstein associate, Paolo Zampoli, is who introduced Melania to Donald Trump. And Paolo Zampoli is in the same business of procuring young women, whether it be for Hollywood, for acting, for modeling, for pageants. And Trump had a pageant of his own, the Trump Miss USA pageant, which, by the way, he hand-selected Erica Kirk for, and she became Miss USA Arizona. So these things, it's kind of a small community of these PDF files that all kind of travel together. And, you know, the people who traffic in the movement of young women and underage young women and underage girls and boys. And they have an interest in this. This is why you see, like, Erica Kirk, it's like no surprise to me that she was plugged into Romanian orphanages, you know, Eastern European orphanages dealing with victims of these types of crimes. It's no secret, or at least maybe it is. I'll tell you now. Also, Tyler Boyer of Turning Point USA was involved with Eastern European orphanages of his own in Ukraine. Erica Kirk was working with these types of victims in China. They put themselves around these people who are extremely vulnerable. And then what happens to them? They end up as subjects of the videos that are then in a vault somewhere in a bunker, similar to the one that's being built below the White House right now. This one probably in Israel. And in the hands of people who then show these videos to powerful elected members of our government, elected in air quotes, of our government, or, you know, powerful executives, banking and finance titans, and, you know, corporate CEOs. So it's horrific. It's awful. But that is the linchpin. And I have said before that it's my opinion that if the American people, or if the entire world population were to at one time, all of a sudden, simultaneously have access to an unredacted version of what actually happened, whether you call it whatever you want, the Epstein files, just whatever. Pretend that you just for 1 minute were all knowing about who it is that's on tape and what they're doing. I think that there would be, first of all, no safe place for these people to hide, certainly. And I think that you would see not just American, but throughout the West, you would see governmental apparatus completely implode. They would cease to exist. I think that there would be no more such thing as the ruling class, at least as we know it. And it would be a very dangerous situation for the people who I suspect are probably on those tapes doing the things that I don't even want to imagine, just based on the things that we have read. And of course, because of the list of things that you sent me, I can't talk about any of them. But if you have access to these files, you will know what I'm talking about. What happened at Zorro Ranch? You know, where these little children's lifeless bodies are now. What happened at Trump golf courses? What happened at Mar-a-Lago? These people do these things in the wide open, by the way. And again, as I was beginning to allude to, this is the reason why I think so many people are unwilling to open their eyes, because things were so bad. Things were so awful. There was no future for America. And they put all their eggs in the basket of the message that Donald Trump was delivering, but they failed to separate the message from the man. And so in a form of the most, I guess, on steroids, turbocharged, supercharged form of idolatry I think I've ever seen before, people that aren't even Americans, worship this guy. There was this black pastor called Mark Burns who was just on a Trump golf course in Florida unveiling this huge golden statue of Trump, literally the golden calf for Trump supporters. And they're doing this in the wide open, like Donald Trump posting himself as, you know, depicted as Jesus Christ, and then be like, oh, I was actually a doctor or some medic. Yeah, okay. And the list goes on and on and on. But these people, and this hits really close to home, I'll tell your audience this. About 3 weeks ago, I have a very close relationship with my dad. And, my parents were divorced when I was 2 years old, but I have always been extremely close to my father, who is a Vietnam War veteran. And he was kind of psyoped into the Toby Keith version of "we will put a boot in your ass, that's the American way" type of mindset. He's one of these, 2A guys, which I am too. I'm a firm and staunch believer in the Second Amendment. I think that the right to bear arms is not only critical, but that it's essential. And I see infringements all the time. Just the mere idea of having to go and get a permit to carry a firearm is an infringement. It's a delay. It's an infringement. And the fact that that's not a federal, I shouldn't need anything. I am a law-abiding American, and I should be able to carry a firearm whenever I want to possess as many of them and as much ammo as I want to, because that is my God-given, inherent, inalienable right. But my dad is one of these, from my cold, dead hands kind of guys, but if the Trump administration were to send its representative to his door and say, hey, Mr. Peters, we need your firearms, he would give them to them because it's Donald Trump asking. If it were Joe Biden, he would be throwing around the F word and probably becoming violent with whoever it was that showed up to his door. Because that is the partisan weapon. That is the left versus the right. That is the Trump versus the world. And it is the good versus evil paradigm that we actually need to be looking at, because all of the rest of it is such a psyop, but it runs so deep and it's so effective, and it's been used against primarily baby boomers, I would say, have probably been the greatest victims of this. They've allowed themselves to be. They're a very selfish generation of people, generally speaking. There are some based boomers, and we have them in my audience. Just by mere virtue of them watching the show, you can tell. But my dad told me that he felt that what I was saying on my show about Donald Trump was hateful, and that the things that I was saying about Jewish billionaires and about Israel's parasitical relationship to the United States government was, detrimental to America and to Americans. And he said that that was hateful. And he said, I don't know what happened to you, but you have become such an angry and hateful and spiteful person that I can't even listen to your show anymore. And I started trying to talk to my dad. He lives 2 hours away. I see him all the time. I drive 2 hours. He owns a dog kennel facility in northern Wisconsin, and I go there to see him often. I have two sons and a daughter, 14, 11, and 7, and this is the time of their lives where a relationship with their grandfather, especially my boys, is, it's critical in their lives. I mean, it's just such an influence. I mean, I remember my grandparents, my grandfathers were like extremely important to me, and they were so influential on my life in the way that I think. But anyways, he told me that I don't know if I can even continue talking to you anymore. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? And then he announced that he was going to block my phone number. And then he did that. And in order to remain loyal to Donald Trump, my dad, and to this regime, to this idea, and to this war, I guess, to the Epstein class, he cut off his relationship with his only child, with his only son, and with his grandchildren. And so to me, that was a real eye-opener. And it's no secret to people who have heard of me before that I spent about a year and a half very angrily reporting on these types of things. I was using language that was very shocking. And all of that, by the way, was premeditated and by design, because I was forced with an ultimatum. Basically, I came to a T in the road after the response that I received that I told you about with the USS Liberty interviews that I published. I knew, and not just from outside pressure, from these, you know, rags that were writing these hit pieces on me that were designed, of course, to try to defund the network, to, you know, to make it less appealing for advertisers and sponsors to remain on board, to attach their name or their likeness or their brand to this network because of the way that it was being portrayed. Also from the inside, I was getting pressured. The people that used to work with me were saying, I don't think that you should talk like this. I don't think that you should go down this road. And it's going to affect you, and you're going to lose money, and you're going to lose funding. And at the time, you know, this is coming off of COVID-19, which it's no secret that I was at the forefront of all of that. That's kind of how my name became known around the world, was for the work that I was leading during COVID. The experts that we were talking to, the doctors, the microscopic imaging that we were looking at live, the researchers, the peer-reviewed published paper, the patents, you know, for this thing that they call the pegylated lipid nanoparticle that's in all of these vials. So that's where all of that. And so that attracted a lot of funding for the network, because there was this massive platform that was going viral on Rumble. We had the largest organically grown Rumble channel in that platform's existence. I believe that we still do. What I've learned from Rumble has been very disappointing. And when you look at Rumble's SEC filings, that tells the whole story. You'll find BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street, Howard Lutnick, Cantor Fitzgerald, Dan Bongino owns over $100 million in Rumble stock. These are the people that I'm pointing at. And then all of a sudden, there starts this suppression. But before that happened, I'm being pressured from the inside. And then it turned into emails directly from my biggest sponsors and the people who were funding projects like Occupied and other various documentary projects and places that I was going and events that we were holding and the studio building and all of these things were being funded by these particular people. And they said, you know, we would caution you that if you continue to go down this road, there are going to be decisions that are made. Effectively, what they were saying was, no more shekels for you if you continue talking about this topic. And so I came to this T in the road, and then there was the in-person conversations, which were really kind of more in your face, I guess, is how I would describe it. And it was very direct, and it was very threatening. And it was, if you continue to do this, we are done. And this is going to cost you millions and millions of dollars. And don't do this, Stu. Don't do this. This is going to be the death of you. We're talking millions and millions of dollars. And I said, you know, I'm out. I'm not doing that. You know, I've got kids. I'm looking at my country. I don't believe that there is a political solution, in the sense that when I say that, I don't mean everybody go, you know, act ways that will get you arrested. I don't mean go hurt anybody. What I mean when I say that there is no political solution, I mean that with inside this current system of governance, the system of governance that has been set up by and is run by and is fueled by the private equity overlords like Larry Fink at BlackRock and the Miriam Adelsons and the APACs and the Sheldon Adelsons, he's gone now. But you know, and there's a lot of focus on APAC too, but there's several others. You know, there's J Street, there's a lot of them that kind of cloak their identity. And now as more attention is directed toward this issue, you're going to find that that's going to become more and more, of a mainstream way that these people handle their business. But at the end of the day, that's who funds, that's who props up, that's who runs this government, and then everything that's attached to it. All of the crimes that are being carried out, not just here against the American people, but around the world. Now, here, obviously, is my main focus. That's what I care about. But the reason why I talk about the things that are happening in Gaza to the Palestinians, the things that are happening to Christians and Muslims alike in Iran, in Syria, in Iraq, all over the place, in the West Bank, and now in Lebanon, I mean, the entire span in Ukraine, and, you know, with Russians and Ukrainians, a lot of them ethnic Russians, a lot of them Christians and brothers wars killing each other. The reason I report on that, the reason why I look at all of that, is because that is the agenda for our country. That is the agenda for everyone outside of that class of people. And that is supremacy. And that is deadly. And that is imminent. And they are, when I say things like, we're all going to be in the gulag together, you know, it sounds hyperbolic to people, but I'm dead serious. Because the goal here, the stated objective, is enslavement or imprisonment, whether it be virtual, whether it be financial, whether it be physical, or all of the above. That is the goal. And we've seen this play out. We've seen people be debanked. We have seen people lose access to social media platforms. They're not allowed to say anything. I'm a perfect example. I was kicked off of Spotify and I was kicked off of YouTube for COVID disinformation, then reallowed back on the programs, on the platforms after they found out, or after they were forced to admit that I was right about everything.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
And so when you're looking at, you know, this evening on my show, tune in, because I'm going to be really diving into the data center project. And all of these things are connected to the same nation state of Israel. And that's not hateful to say. That's not illegal to say, certainly. It is true. And objectively, factually, it's verifiable. This is publicly discoverable information. And so that's, I guess, Sean, what gets me the most about Epstein and about Trump and about Iran, this war, about the data centers, about the customizable AI-generated, personalized mRNA concoctions that are going to be sent to everybody's door, and the wearable medical devices that include, you know, transdermal needles, microscopic needles on a patch that's got a QR code embedded to it so that these people can track all of your data. They will know more about you than you know about yourself. And I'm not saying that, just making that up as my own theory. This is what Yuval Noah Harari of the World Economic Forum said. He said, we are going to, the whole idea of of free will. And this is a quote from Yuval Noah Harari. He said, this whole idea of free will, or as, you know, the idea of individuals with like a soul, that's all gone now. That's dead. And we are going to know more about these people than they know about themselves. And this is true, and that's evidenced by what I just described happened to me personally, what hit closest to home with my father. These people know more about my dad than my dad knows about himself. And he will tell me, he texted me before he blocked me, and he said, I don't know what you've ever done for this country, but for this country, I crawled my ass through rice paddies in Vietnam. And I didn't want to tell him why he crawled his ass through the rice paddies in Vietnam. But it turns out that every single one of these young American men with bright futures, with their entire lives ahead of them, who have been deployed, who have volunteered to pay the ultimate price, to make the ultimate sacrifice, to drain their blood and lay lifeless on some battlefield thousands of miles away from where they know anything or from where anybody loves them, in the sand somewhere or in a jungle somewhere or in a rice paddy somewhere, has been to the detriment, has been the death of our country economically and as related to our national security interests. There is no upside in any of these things, but there is one country that benefits from all of them, and it's Israel. And so that's why I think when you look at candidacies like Dan Bilzerian, for example, who, by the way, has my full endorsement, I support him, I recognize why he's being attacked. It's obviously extremely coordinated. The things that they are saying have been either made up of whole cloth or they have been completely exaggerated and taken out of context. There was no upside for Dan Bilzerian to announce a candidacy. There was no upside for Dan Bilzerian, who had his entire life ahead of him. I mean, he had it made. He could do anything he wants to. He spent his whole life, for the last 15 years, we've seen him on tape, driving tanks, shooting, you know, guns and having fun and free diving. And, you know, he's surrounded constantly by the world's most beautiful women. Like, there's no upside for him to engage in this conversation, to put his name and his face out there on the line, but he did it. And tens or hundreds of millions of dollars maybe has been taken away from him as a result of that. And then on top of that, he doubled down by saying, okay, well, I'm going to run against Randy Fine in Congress, who is the guy. Randy Fine is the guy who, while he was part of the Florida state legislature, he authored and sponsored legislation that was later signed by Governor Ron DeSantis. When Governor Ron DeSantis flew to Israel to sign this legislation on Israeli soil in front of Benjamin Netanyahu, that makes it illegal. It makes it a crime for you to pass out flyers that are critical of Israel in Florida. Well, Randy Fine then, you know, he gets promoted to U.S. congressman to federalize all of this. And then Project Esther comes out. It's 34 pages that show us the blueprint of all of this. Again, none of this is a Stu Peters Show conspiracy theory. This is a conspiracy, a real one. And all of it is publicly available. So I think, Sean, to answer your question, I think that the Epstein stuff is at the center of all of this. I think it's the linchpin that really wakes everybody up if they ever really get that information. I think, again, as I said before, there would be no safe place for these people to hide. But that is the thing that controls the people who are installed as the actors that are going to play their roles. And they are going to carry out this agenda, not necessarily just because it behooves them financially, but because of the ways that they are compromised otherwise via this Epstein operation, which of course was run on behalf of Israel by an agent of the Mossad, by Jeffrey Epstein, whose employer was the Israeli intel apparatus, which works in concert with the American intel apparatus, you know, the Five Eyes thing, whatever you want to call it, the CIA, the Mossad, MI6, it doesn't matter. They are all the same people because they are all working toward the same objective. These are the people who affect violent coup d'etats in places like Ukraine after, you know, a democratically elected administration where both sides agreed the vote was fair and legitimate to install this administration in Ukraine was overthrown. And then they use the media, which is controlled by these same people, to present this as like a populist uprising, you know, like a BLM style type of thing, when in fact, no, that's not what it was. And these color revolutions or these, you know, planned or effective and successful or even the unsuccessful and failed color revolutions are always the first step. And that takes us to where we are today with the failed Iranian color revolution that they portray as this is the reason why we're going into Iran, is to liberate the Iranian people, to liberate the Iranian protesters. They're laying waste to these people. We've got to go do something about it. Oh, well, then it changes. Well, now it's that Iran can't have this weapon or that weapon. And now it's like, well, until they open the Strait of Hormuz. The Hormuz Strait was wide open before we went and double tapped 165 Iranian schoolgirls in a surprise attack while there were supposedly, allegedly diplomatic, you know, discussions happening between the United States and Iran to avoid just exactly this. Americans don't support kinetic conflict. Americans don't support war. And the only remaining people who are even remotely cheering any of this on are the mind control subjects that remain firmly, you know, in the grip of the Trump spell, which of course is put on by Hollywood and by the media And it's put on by the architects in these Intel communities who are all working toward the same objective, which is greater Israel. And that's what it is. And until that objective is completed, until the conquest of greater Israel is realized, these people won't stop until they're stopped.
Well said, Stu. We love detailed and long answers on this channel. But, you know, heartbreaking what you said about your dad. I know when I go from my parents' house, that's the only time I see anyone watching the BBC News. And it's just so transparent. You see these people reading off auto cues. They look like mannequins. And you just see right through them. It's, you know, they're part of the murder machine. And like you said, the deep state military-industrial complex, biggest murder machine terrorist organization in the world. They've been overthrowing Iranian leaders going back to, what is it, Mossadegh in the 50s. On and on and on and on it goes. There's nothing new under the sun when it comes to that.
And that's because they will not bow down to this banking cabal. And that's why BRICS is such a big deal. And, you know, at the beginning of this whole Iranian conflict, I said, well, hold on a second. This is exactly how we end up in a position where it's like, you know, NATO versus BRICS. Because although BRICS is first and foremost, of course, an economic alliance, I think that it would be naive to believe that there's not a military component to all of this. And among Iran's allies are Venezuela, where Nicolas Maduro obviously was kidnapped along with his wife, Celia Flores, on behalf of Paul Singer, who had bought up Citgo in a distressed sale in a Delaware court presided over by an AIPAC judge. And Citgo is the American arm of the Venezuelan oil industry. And so he needed access to all of that oil. And so effectively, from where I sit, it looks like Paul Singer stroked a check to Donald Trump, basically renting young American blood and treasure to risk that for Venezuela. Now, we have been told that there were no casualties in Venezuela. And at first, I believed that because of how quick it happened. But knowing what I now know about Iran, which I want to get to, I don't necessarily believe that. But I said, you know, this looks like a BRICS versus NATO showdown because you have China and you have Russia posturing. Vladimir Putin is saying, hey, if you continue to, you know, wage this aggression in the Middle East and against our allies, and if you continue to just like, you know, like pirates hijack and confiscate oil tankers on the high seas, you can't do that. Like, I don't know who you think you are, but you're not allowed to do that. And I was going, well, this is the NATO versus BRICS thing. But then the Trump administration postured against NATO as well, which, I mean, I think NATO, obviously, it's a joke. I see NATO for what it is. So I'm not saying this in such a way. I'm not framing this like, oh, NATO is great. But he started posturing against these people who are supposed to be allegedly our allies, our NATO allies, by saying, hey, we want Greenland. And they're like, well, yeah, Greenland isn't for sale. And he's like, well, I didn't ask if it's for sale or not. We're going to take it, whether it be the easy way or the hard way. So, like, what are you going to do? Like, militarily go take out the Eskimo people, the igloo people? And like, is that what we're doing? These igloo people that have been there? And we're going to, that's where they want to put the data centers. That's also where Ronald Lauder, the president of the World Jewish Congress and big time Jewish billionaire who's a contributor to Donald Trump, recently acquired, just like Paul Singer acquired Citgo under a distressed sale, presided over by an AIPAC judge. That's how Ronald Lauder, the heir to the Estee Lauder cosmetic brand, inherited Greenlandic water companies and needs control of the water. So, I mean, all of this comes back to the same people in the same way that, you know, BlackRock now sits on top of the rare earth minerals in Ukraine. They sit on top of the lithium deposits in Western North Carolina, where, you know, Hurricane Helene ripped through there. Totally natural, totally organic, of course. They own the rights to the Panama Canal. They own the rights to every American's 401k, over 90 million Americans, $12 trillion in retirement accounts in this country by President Trump in August were signed over to private equity firms. They could just drain your 401k, go to the high stakes gambling tables in cryptocurrency and data centers and real estate. If they lose it all or never replenish it, guess what? You have no recourse thanks to Donald Trump. So, you know, going back to Iran and this, like, you know, world stage, it's become very obvious that no matter what kind of way we betray our allies, this is an objective that we are going to stick to, period, no matter what. And if the lie about the first objective is, you know, somehow exposed and people are saying, wait a minute, I thought you said that we decimated Iran's nuclear capabilities in that first strike that you did. Okay, well, now we're liberating these people. Oh, by laying waste to their entire population, by carpet bombing them, by taking out their churches and their critical infrastructure like water desalinization plants, power plants, energy production facilities, oil refineries. Yeah, this is a war of aggression that was waged on behalf of Israel at the direction of Israel. And that's been admitted to by people in our own government, by Donald Trump, by Marco Rubio, by Pete Hegseth, by General Dan Cain, by all of these people. And it's not a secret. So that objective of greater Israel, it's their stated goal. That is what they are after. And now you have a country in Iran, which is a formidable opponent, which has said, we're not negotiating with you people because we deem you to be terrorists. We're not negotiating with the Epstein class because we know who you are. We've seen the propaganda wars, obviously, have been won by Iran. Have you seen the Lego videos? I mean, these things are, they're awesome. They're waking up a lot of people. And they are really hitting, with the truth, all of the things that we've been talking about. So it's funny because Americans like my dad, they have been psyoped or programmed into believing, that this group of unsympathetic people, these Arabs, the sand people, that they are, the bad people, that they're evil. They chant death to America. Well, I mean, who wouldn't chant death to an entity that has been, unrelentingly killing your people for as long as they have, and like destroying your countries and dropping bombs on you and installing puppet governments that are subservient to the Rothschild cabal. Yeah, I mean, I would probably be upset with the country that was responsible for all of that too. But while the media has been saying, this is the number one state sponsor of terror, this is the axis of evil. Actually, no, that's been the United States government. And, the foot soldiers of this cabal is the American military. It's no different than the Bloods and the Crips on the streets of LA. It's no different than the Vice Lords or the Gangster's Disciples on the streets of Chicago. It's no different than any gangbanger anywhere. That's what they are. They are an organized crime syndicate. And they have written themselves into positions of perceived authority, which is only supposed to be given to them by the consent of the governed. And they have just run roughshod on our country. And so now the Iranians are saying, yeah, we're not going to do that. But these people aren't the low IQ goat herding Arabs that Fox News will tell you that they are. These people have an advanced civilization. Tehran, their capital city, is larger than New York City. They have more people there than we do here. They have amazing infrastructure and technology that people marvel at. They are Persians, first of all. They're not goat herding low IQ Arabs, but we're even running from those people, as the Houthis have now been, aggressively attacking our naval vessels. And so now, in order to get to the Strait of Hormuz, we have to navigate an entire continent, the big, powerful U.S. military. We have to navigate around all the way around the south tip of Africa to get to the Strait of Hormuz to avoid the Houthis, who really are actually goat herders. They are low IQ. And it's not, hey, look, nothing against any race of people, but that's been proven. It's been documented. They are actually the low IQ goat herders, not the Iranians. And the Iranians haven't even begun to tap into their missile defense systems or their offensive systems. I can't blame them for trying to get a nuke. I don't think that they had one. I don't think that they had aspirations for one, and I can cite the religious fatwa that was in place, by the Ayatollah that banned and prohibited the production of a nuclear warhead. I know for a fact that Iran does not possess a intercontinental ballistic delivery system that's capable of hitting my country. And so there was no threat. It was all based on lies, and now they're saying they're going to finish it. And Trump is now saying, well, when things go back to normal, the way they were before this war, then we'll just be done with it. Once they reopen the strait, which, by the way, was wide open for business before we went and double-tapped schoolgirls in an Iranian elementary school, then maybe we'll think about negotiating. These people don't want to negotiate. And so what's going to happen, my prediction, is that there is going to be an attempt at a full-scale physical ground force occupation of Iran, because a successful ground invasion of Iran is the only way that they can accomplish the conquest of Greater Israel. Iran is the last domino standing in the Middle East on the way to Greater Israel. It's the only way that they can get there. And they've proven that we do not have air superiority. Whether Pete Hegseth says that between drinks or not, it's just a lie, because we've seen stealth fighters get shot out of the sky. We saw, huge gaping holes in the side of aircraft carriers. Oh, it was just a mysterious fire in the laundry room or the kitchen. There was a flood somewhere. No, that was Iranian weaponry that was basically decapitating this now obsolete monstrosity of an aircraft carrier strike group. And so these people, these Iranians, if you want to do this, you have to get in there on the ground. Well, they tried that. They tried to steal Iranian uranium. They got caught doing it. They staged the rescue of downed pilots and told us a story about a pilot who walked 100 miles with a broken ankle and, climbed seven mountains and finally to the peak of the tallest Iranian mountain that there is, known to man. And he did all of this draped in an American flag. And when he got there, he turned on his transponder. And the first message that he sent was, "God is good." And then they rescued him. But what I actually saw in real life was a couple of downed C-130s. C-130s, by the way, carry heavy equipment and they carry a lot of personnel. Not just one or two people. They carry a lot of personnel. And there were two of them downed. I saw the charred remains of Americans inside of them. I saw their burnt bodies, their fried bodies as they crashed and burned. I saw downed fighter jets. And this was a botched Iranian uranium heist. And they had actually revealed this plan. It was actually presented to Donald Trump that the plan was they were going to fly in and, while under enemy fire, they were going to build a makeshift runway, and they were going to fly in these big C-130s filled with excavation equipment, and they were going to dig deep into the earth and into the side of the mountains, and they were going to extract this uranium while under enemy fire the whole time. And then they were going to use that makeshift runway that they had just built while they're doing all of this extraction, and they were going to fly away with the uranium. Well, that didn't happen. They got caught doing it, and they got killed. They died. And, I said I wanted to talk about this later, and the reason why I don't believe the no casualties story out of Venezuela is because now these deaths in this Iranian conflict are classified. For the first time since Vietnam, deaths have been classified. So if your son, or if mine, or if anybody's son who's of legal age gets drafted or otherwise conscripted to go fight and die in this war, and you're like, well, what happened to my son? Where's my son? My son left, never came back. He was going to like some training or something, the last I heard. Well, that's classified. And you will never hear from your son again. And you will be told by this occupied government that that's classified. And if you ever find out the truth about that and you speak about it, you will go to prison for revealing classified information. And so this ground invasion is the only option left. And I don't know, what is it going to be? 200, 300, 500,000 young American men? What's it going to be? 1 million, 2-3 million? What's it going to take to go into Iran? Because if you look at the geographical location, first of all, it's surrounded by the Strait of Hormuz. It's surrounded by water. The water that surrounds Iran is controlled by the Iranian military. It's not controlled by the United States military. It's controlled by the Iranians and their allies in Russia and China. There's nuclear subs from Russia. There's probably a lot of Chinese warships in the area too. By the way, those guys flexed and shut off access to the South China Sea the other week. I don't know if you caught wind of that or not, which by the way is where basically all goods that get transported anywhere on earth go through at one point or another, and the Chinese can shut that down. So yeah, we can't get there by water. We can't get there by air because we've already seen that we have no air superiority and that they take out any of our planes that we try to invade their airspace with. So how do you get in there? First of all, you don't. And then if you do somehow miraculously get through this Iranian military blockade and you end up on the shores of Iranian soil, now you have these massive cliffs, these ice cliffs, and inside of them, there are hidden missiles. There are, Iranian warriors that are fighting in a war of national survival because they have seen what happened in Iraq and in Libya and in Syria and in Lebanon and in Gaza and in the West Bank. They have seen what has happened in Ukraine. They have seen what has happened every single place that the American war empire has gone to spread democracy and they're not about it. They don't want it. Saw what happened in Afghanistan, where we spent 20 years teaching the importance of transgenderism to Pashtun tribesmen and looking the other way while little boys were violated by warlords. So they don't want any. As a matter of fact, the Afghanis have decided they would rather just have the Taliban than anything that the American superstate has to offer. So it's going to be a deadly situation. I think that the Strait of Hormuz is probably ground zero for the biggest false flag the world has ever seen in the way of American death. If you thought 9/11 was big, you know, that was what we were told. 3,000 Americans were killed that day, with the exception, by the way, of some people who didn't show up for work. Howard Lutnick being one of them. Cantor Fitzgerald, who enjoyed his headquarters at the Trade Center. People like Lucky Larry, you know, Larry Silverstein had that dermatology appointment, so he wasn't able to be there. So these people are funding these things, and this is the objective. And with the American sentiment pushing back against this conflict, it's, and with these deaths being classified, and, you know, with the AI-driven superstate surveillance data center, digital prison camps that our own people are building for their children, our own people are building their children's and the generations that come after their children's prison cells is what they're doing. They're leading them to the slaughter for the shekels. I came across something interesting. There are, actually, it was a comment on Spotify. I'm on Spotify too, if you guys get that, Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio. But there was a comment on Spotify that said, I keep coming across these ads on social media. Don't go to college, go to the trades. So this is the new PSYOP, where they're now offering young Americans $200,000 a year to go build data centers. And they're doing it because, I mean, they just take a look at the cost of everything in this country. I drive a diesel truck. It costs me $200 now to fill my truck, to drive my kids around to their hockey practices and games and tournaments, and to their baseball practices and games and tournaments, which comes second in my life only to Jesus Christ. My kids are up absolutely the center of everything I do. I'm a father first, totally plugged into my kids. And I love, you know, I love being with them, and you know, they're just so on point, watching them grow and realize this stuff. And that's, I guess, the big white pill for me. I don't know how long we have. We've been here for like an hour, and I haven't let you get a word in edgewise. I'm sorry about that. But I'll just end here. I think that the big white pill for me is that there is a massive amount of young people who now see the things that I'm saying and a whole lot more that I'm not allowed to say here. They see all of these things that we see, that I see and you do. And they, it feels like, are unwilling to go along with that. And at the rate that information is traveling now, people are learning about these things at breakneck speed. And so for me, I guess, when I hear my 11-year-old son, Eli, tell me, hey, Dad, there's some of those chosen people. Or when I, you know, am getting texts from my 14-year-old in his social studies class, and he's telling me that he's, you know, the subject matter is, you know, the atrocities of Auschwitz. And the things that he's texting me and what he's saying and the questions that he's asking of his teacher, to me, that's really promising, because there is a foundation for all of this. And the foundation is that victimhood narrative. The foundation is we are the perpetual victims, and you owe us this, and you should be ashamed to be an American. You should be ashamed to be a patriot. You should be ashamed to be white. You should be ashamed to be straight. You know, and all of these things are evil. It's the inverse of reality. And so I just think that so many people are breaking free of this matrix, and we owe our generation a lot of thanks for that, because we are the ones who, of course, put the Zoomers onto this, who are now the future of our political, physical, and spiritual, you know, aspects of our country. So I'm not pessimistic. If I thought it were over, I certainly wouldn't be here every single day, you know, waging this war of information. I think that, you know, what we do is absolutely essential. It's critical. And in the information war, we are definitely a huge threat to the control structure that has set itself up all throughout the West.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yeah, you're my ideal guest, Stu. I like to just sit here and listen and not say anything. So
we've got a poll, man. That's why I get paid the big bucks.
We've got a poll up. And 90% of the viewers believe that Epstein was primarily Mossad. And, you know, in Victoria's book as well, disgusting, the president, the prime minister, she called him, we believe it's Ehud Barak, not only did he violate her, but was choking her, almost killed her. And she went back to Epstein and said, you know, here's what he's done. And he said, it's part of your job, just get on with it. Yet, you know, Prince Andrew, disgusting what he did, but he gets all the heat, and they don't even put Barak's name in the book, and none of the news agencies report on that. So you're right, it's all slanted to protect the big players out of that country. And I know, so on this desk though, you've got the Occupied. Could you tell us about the Occupied?
If you haven't seen Occupied, you have to see it. This is a film that I did with Sean Hibbler, who's an amazing documentarian. I would prefer to never have to work with anybody else. As long as I can afford to do business with Sean Hibbler, I will. He did another doc that we have here, Old World Order, which people should see. But Occupied addresses this particular situation. There is another series out there, Europa, that, you know, obviously that's like 14 or 16 or 6 million hours long, which is really good. And I think it should be mandatory viewing material for everybody that goes to high school in this country or anywhere else. But this is a 90-minute, 101 introductory level, eye-opening, irrefutable, indisputable demonstration of evidence and facts and documentation and the words of the criminals that are carrying out these crimes against humanity. And, you know, after watching this, if you have somebody in your family or somebody that you know, or if you yourself, you're not sure what side of the fence you sit on when it controls to who's actually controlling our government, when you watch this film, it doesn't just get into our government, but governments all the way throughout the West, because the tentacles of this octopus, of this being, again, the words, you're saying a lot of the words that you sent me that I'm not allowed to say, by the way. You must play by a different set of rules than I do. I don't know. But anyhow, when you watch Occupied, if you have not seen this, you have to see it. You can watch it for free. It's my pinned tweet on X. So I'm at Real Stu Peters on X, and it's my pinned tweet there. If you want to buy it, if you want it on DVD or Blu-ray, you can get it at spnstore.com. That's my store, spnstore.com. And I highly recommend that because obviously the digital prisons are being built and you're not going to be allowed to possess these types of things. And when you look at our history, when you look at the history of the world, in the 1930s, it's no secret what the conditions were on the streets of Berlin and all throughout Germany. You know, you had mother-daughter teams on the street corners doing horrific things in exchange for their next meal. And there was a movement that countered that. And that movement attracted the attention of millions upon millions of people. I mean, it made Trump rallies look like, you know, Biden's basement. It was just like massive. And how did that happen? That didn't happen by way of the internet. That didn't happen on X or on social media, did it? That happened by way of real world people, you know, like real human beings being fed up and having had enough and talking to their neighbors about that and talking to their communities about that and going into bars and into churches and into town halls and talking about this issue and saying, hey, we need to oppose this. And they did that. And so I think that having physical you know, tangible, touchable things is really important. Plus, I just want you to buy my documentary, of course, because the traditional methods of funding around here have been cut off because of my commitment to remain steadfast in the truth and remain obedient to God. So anyway, Occupied, you can get it at spnstore.com. You've got to see this film. Dan Bilzerian's actually in this film. Max Egan is in this film. There's several people in this film that you will probably know, and it was directed by Sean Hibbler, who's amazing. So Occupied, you got to see it. Thank you for allowing me to show that. I appreciate it.
Thank you for coming on. Do you have time to answer a few viewer questions?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, here's a pertinent one then. And a few variations of it have come in. What is the alternative to all of this?
Yeah. Well, I think I just described that a little bit. There have been successful attempts at this, which have been stifled. I think that, you know, anything alternate to an occupied two-party system where, you know, I mean, the people have control of their country and have control of their future and have control of the future of their children. So there are a lot of things that we have tabled on the show that I probably can't table here. But that's one thing that if you have never heard of the Stu Peters Show, that's one thing that you will get out of this is that I am 100% focused on not being a bloviating blowhard, but being remedy and solutions focused. And I think that there are a lot of things that we can do. Do we have to try electing people? Okay. How many people do we have to try? How many election cycles do we have to go through where it's like, okay, well, if this one person doesn't get elected, well, then I will be able to for sure determine that, okay, listen, what happened to Charlie Kirk is central to all of this. Okay, this is a person who was having a documented on video real life awakening, and we saw what happened on September 10th as a result of that. I think that he was going to be a presidential contender. And given the awakening that he was having, I think that his candidacy would have looked a lot different than what the puppeteers had hoped that it would be. The puppeteers that had control of Turning Point USA from its birth. The puppeteers that had control of Charlie Kirk since he was very, very young. He was living a real-life Truman Show. The people that he surrounded himself, his friends, even his wife, his church, the pastors, the leaders that, you know, were surrounding him constantly. He had access to the Trump White House. He had proximity to Don Jr. That was his best friend. When Don Jr. could bring one person fishing with him, he brought Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk saw the Trump administration and the wider governmental apparatus from the inside out and saw it for what it was. He saw the Epstein class up close and personal. He saw the cover-ups. He saw the kinetic confrontation coming with Iran. He saw what was happening in Venezuela coming, and he was opposed to all of that. He voiced those, you know, concerns to President Trump. He was shouted down. He started talking about these things on his show. He started talking about these things on other people's show. It became a problem. He was dragged, in my opinion, by somebody who was supposed to be his best friend, Mikey McCoy, and his wife, Erica Francfay Kirk, to Bill Ackman's mansion in the Hamptons, where there was a pressure session. He pushed back on the pressure. He refused to submit. Then the phone call came in from Benjamin Netanyahu, tabling $150 million to bring Charlie Kirk back onto the plantation. That didn't work. He rejected that. And then what we saw on September 10th happened. There's a lot that I could go into there. You know, if you want to have me back for an hour, I don't think anybody has put this thing together like I have, to be honest with you. There are people who are doing great work on this. I admire the work that Candace Owens is doing. I admire the work that Jimmy Dore is doing. But there seems to be, with Candace at least, a stopping point as far as how far she's willing to go, given that I know the information that she knows and has been unwilling to say. So, you know, there's been accusations that Candace is kind of like stringing this along because she has a YouTube channel and it's in her financial interest to do this. There's other people who say, well, there's some 6 million D chess being played here, just like Donald Trump, and she's trying to allow these people to expose themselves before she drops the hammer. And a lot of that has been done. A lot of that has been done. But we know things about Pete Hegseth. Specifically, we know things about the plane that Pete Hegseth almost exclusively uses, tail number 990404. Which went on a special air mission on September 8th to Fort Huachuca on a direct from, excuse me, that was not a direct. It went from Joint Base Andrews to a few other places out west, and then changed to a SAM mission, a SAM identifier, which means Special Air Mission. And here in the United States, what that means is that is a person that's on board that is doing the business of the president or the vice president. A Special Air Mission flight can only be ordered up by the president or the vice president. That's it. Whoever's on board is sending a message for, receiving a message for, or doing the business of the president or the vice president. That plane, Special Air Mission Flight SAM 702 was its call sign. Everybody can look this up, and I hope that you do. Publicly available. Open it up. Go to Flight Radar. Go to any of these tracking devices. Look it up for yourself. SAM 702. That plane ended up on Fort Huachuca 2 days before what happened to Charlie Kirk happened. Then, in the aftermath, and this is after Tyler Robinson probably didn't do what we're told that he did with his grandfather's stolen .30-06 with Charlie Kirk's Superman-like neck bones of steel. That didn't happen. After that didn't happen, about 2 weeks later, I posted a viral video to Twitter, which I can't say these words here. You have to go see it, where I said, hey, I don't think that's what happened to Charlie. This is what I think happened. That was 2 weeks after September 10th. That was on September 24th, I believe. As a matter of fact, I'm sure it was. On October 10th, 2 weeks after that, there was a facility in Eastern Tennessee called Accurate Energetic Systems. You've probably seen some grumblings about this, shortly referred to as AES. They are a defense contractor, and what they do is they build micro munitions and explosives and things like this, and they fulfilled Department of Defense contracts. They had fulfilled a $440,000 order for the Department of Defense for micro explosives. They were picked up and they went to Orem, Utah, ahead of what happened to Charlie Kirk happened. 2 weeks after I said, hey, I think I might know what happened to Charlie Kirk, that facility blew up, killing everybody inside. 23,000 pounds of explosives went up and everybody inside blew up. They're dead. On that day also, on October 10th, and again, please open up your computers, go to your Flight Radar apps, verify that what I'm saying is not a Stu Peters wild conspiracy theory, but that it's irrefutable, documentable fact. That plane that's almost exclusively used by Pete Hegseth, tail number 99-0404, went on a direct this time from Joint Base Andrews in the DC area to Fort Huachuca. This is on October 10th, 2 weeks after I say this about this thing. Okay. On the same day that this plant is blowing up, killing everybody inside, that plane, 990404, using a different call sign, another SAM mission, Special Air Mission, so vice president or president, the only people that can order this up, goes on a direct to Fort Huachuca and then right back to Joint Base Andrews, except for it took a detour. It dipped south over eastern Tennessee, reduced its airspeed and reduced its altitude while that AES facility was smoldering after it had blown up and killed everybody inside, after fulfilling a DOD contract for micro explosives that were delivered to Orem, Utah ahead of Charlie Kirk's incident. I'm afraid to use words here, on September 10th. So what do we do about this? Well, obviously, there is a very identifiable system. Obviously, there is a very identifiable control and power structure that wishes to inject itself into the lives of everyone throughout the West and now throughout the East. And there is a way to remove yourself from that and to give these people no legitimate jurisdiction in your life. But unfortunately, that comes along with sacrifice. And if I'm speaking for Americans, we have shown, especially historically, and now even more so in recent times, how cucked and how weak we actually are and how unwilling we are to actually make those sacrifices, which is why you have college-age students avoiding college, going to trade school, becoming electricians, and then going and building their own prisons and building the prisons for their own children, because these people just don't get it. There's some other ideas too. There is no law on the books. There's no constitutional amendment that requires most Americans, I think it's like 99% of Americans, to file or pay federal income taxes, that you're doing all of this voluntarily. But that once you sign that confession to the government every year at tax time and you send it in, now you're breaking the law if you don't pay them what you say that you owe them, because you swore under oath that you owe them this money. but you're not required by law. There's no law. Send an email to your congressperson and ask them, can you point to the law or constitutional amendment that requires me to file and pay federal income taxes? You won't hear from them because there isn't one. So there are a lot of things that we can do. There is a lot of information. There's a lot of knowledge that we possess. We have the weapons at our disposal. We have us. We have God. We have one another. There is no way to defeat us if we are unified, of course. And they know that, which brings us back to the very beginning of our conversation today about the way that they divided our country immediately in half with the red, blue, the right, left, the conservative, liberal, the Republican, Democrat paradigm fallacy. It's an alternate reality. And from there, of course, it's factioned off. You know, beyond just Republican, Democrat, there's all kinds of different factions of people. So we're divided. We are at each other's throats. And here's why. Because they want to ensure that we continue to fight each other tooth and nail and be at each other's throats horizontally so that we as a people will never look to fight vertically.
Wow, what a mesmerizing deep dive with an elliptical ending. Absolutely fascinating, Stu. The viewers are asking, thank you for doing the overtime. The viewers are asking, where can they watch your next show?
You can find me on X at Real Stu Peters. You can find me on Rumble. Just search the Stu Peters Network. Or always, no matter what happens to any of these platforms, you can always find me at stupeters.com. We're also, for the time being, on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and iHeartRadio. Spotify seems to be a lot of people's go-to. So it's really easy. You can watch it on your TV. I think Apple Podcasts is just the audio only. But, you know, we're growing and we're growing quickly. And, you know, a lot of people are starting to realize, hey, maybe he wasn't that crazy after all. Some of these things make sense. I want to look into this more. So we appreciate that. StuPeters.com. You can find SPN Live on Spotify, Real Stu Peters on X, and of course on Rumble. Just look for the Stu Peters Network. I see that. I'm so glad I finally found you again, Stu. I'm so glad that we are back together, united again as well. I can't imagine doing anything other than this in these times. So I am here, ride or die. I will never turn on my day ones. I will never turn on my people. I will never sell you out. I will never sell out my country. I will never sell out humanity. And I will be here until my last breath fighting for my kids. And so by de facto, that means, guess what? Fighting for yours. And together, right alongside of you, we are storming the gates of hell. Let's go.
We salute your bravery, Stu, and all the personal sacrifices you've made to, you know, expose these monsters. Again, huge thank you for coming on. We'd love to get you back. I'm going to close the show and let you go. Have a great rest of your day. Cheers.
Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you, Stu. God bless. What a phenomenal guest, folks. And if you want to support Stu's work, if you're watching on replay, all of his links are in the description box below this video. I'll put the top links in the live chat right now. Stu Peters Network website, Rumble. His X is down there as well. Huge thank you to Shane, the guest booker, for getting Stu on. Oh, Facebook just said, you cannot post Stu's link because this goes against our community standards. Facebook, we've got 250,000 followers on Facebook and we have about 10 people watching every show. Zuck's got us so shadow banned, folks. Anyway, we had 1,300 watching across all platforms. So thank you for tuning in. You know, some of you saw I've got the Epstein map top on. This is a Ryan Dawson production. If you want one, link is in the description. It's a way to support Ryan's work. He doesn't ask for donations. You can buy some of his cool merch. We've even got some of it for Baby Ziggy. I've got the T-shirt and the hoodie in this format. And then Saturday, we've got Kevin Annett's story part two coming on. He's going to be talking about demonic encounters as well as some of the activists who've been unalived in Canada exposing things. And then, you know, speaking of Charlie Kirk, we got Red coming back and he's bringing a special guest with him with their own theory of what happened to Charlie Kirk. I think this is Red's part four. So that's going to go from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Saturday. Yeah, only Facebook cares about Facebook. Absolutely. So that's about it for now. Thank you for everyone who answered the poll. Where's the poll finishing at? Yeah, 90% think Epstein is primarily Mossad. We've done tons of that over the years. And yeah, all sides must have a platform no matter what. Yeah, we've got to have all a spectrum of viewpoints to learn the most. And that's what we try to do on this channel. All right.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.